For 12 seasons now, actor Tom Quinn has entertained audiences at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, playing a host of roles, including the title role in King John, Kent in King Lear, and this season he's playing Festy in Twelfth Night. And I thought, since he has all this great experience at the festival, and he's playing in Twelfth Night in his 12th season, that it would be fun if he shared 12 behind-the-scenes secrets of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. And obliging fellow that Tom Quinn is, he agreed. So, number one, there's a great feeling of camaraderie at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival.
It's quite remarkable, yeah, it is. And this summer is, I mean, every summer is exceptional in its way. This summer is quite wonderful. The company of actors and stage management and the designers and all of the artisans and crew and everyone, there's a genuine esprit de corps.
Number two, Tom Quinn says ice packs are important.
If you're sitting in the audience on a warm night, you can fan yourself with your program, but of course we can't do that. And most of the time, our costume designers are sensitive to the fact that we're going to be on stage, and some nights can get pretty warm, and so they try not to put too many layers on us. But you know, for instance, I had a former student, Ian Scarlato, who played the bear in Elizabeth Rex.
Yes.
A couple, three summers ago. And he was just in this giant bear rug of a costume. And he was in there for 30 minutes at a time. And so they would put ice packs in there, like in his pockets. And he had pockets all over his internal costume just to keep him cool, because it was, otherwise, it's just intolerable. And that also happened. I know an actor of a friend of mine who played Falstaff, who had lots of padding, because Falstaff's a big round guy. He had lots of ice packs too, and they help. But they don't completely solve the problem, but they help, yeah.
Number three, even at the Shakespeare Festival, there's no escaping gravity.
The stage out at Ewing Manor is a traditional Shakespeare stage in that it has a large playing space on the ground level, and then there is what is called an above, which is basically a balcony level, sort of, it's about 12 feet off the ground level playing area, and it's a big playing area as well. And as far as we know, I am the only person in the history of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival to fall off the above.
Oh, no.
And it was actually in a production of The Three Musketeers.
Were you in the middle of a show, or was it rehearsals?
It was technical rehearsal. And I was playing Porthos, and we were in a big sword fight. And I was on the above, and I had just basically dealt with three guys, and I knocked them out and threw them around. And then I turn around, and I see my best friend, Athos, who is about to be, he's about to be beset and overcome. And I see him, and I call his name, and I leap for this rope, which goes over a pulley system, and I go down, and the bale of hay goes up to counterweight me, and then I release the rope, and the bale of hay lands on a bad guy, and then I save my buddy. Well, I was wearing my full regalia. I had a long wig. I had a sword in a scabbard. I had a dagger in a sheath. I had my spurs on my boots and this big tabard that I was wearing. And I leapt for the rope, and it just disconnected. It was as if there was, it was like I just leapt. And I went and plummeted to the stage floor with all this hardware on me. And I, amazingly, everybody shrieked, but I landed like a cat on all fours, and nothing was hurt. And everybody came walking up to me. And I initially was fine. I later discovered that I had bruised the balls of my feet so badly that I had to walk on my heels for the next several days because I landed like that. So it was okay. So it was a crazy story with a happy ending.
Number four, there's a lot of spirit at the festival. Spirit gum, that is.
And I hate it.
You hate it.
I hate it. I hate it. And I, as you know, your listening audience can't tell, but right now I have a beard. And so when given a choice in the summertime,
you're going to grow your own.
I'm going to grow my own because it doesn't fall off if it gets humid or I perspire on stage. Which,
has that happened?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
It's such a pain because you spend, instead of playing the scene and focusing on what you want to focus on,
you're trying to hold your beard on.
You're trying to hold your mustache on and not look like you're holding your mustache on. So, and I was playing years ago, this was in the old space.
The rickety old space.
The rickety old space, yes. I was playing Pistol, and the designer had given me this, it was like a Fu Manchu. It was this long, really long, it went almost down to my navel, this goatee that was like that long. And, you know, I had to stick it on with spirit gum. And I was playing two other characters in that production, so I had to put it on, take it off to do somebody else, put it back on. So spirit gum on, spirit gum off. And it's all sticky. And I'm on stage, and these long, fake beard hairs would, like, get stuck and all wound up, and I hated it, so.
How do you keep it on if it starts to fall?
You just have to hold it. I mean, I have to maintain the illusion. If I take it off completely, then, you know, the illusion is blown. Now, if I hold it on there with one finger, then that sort of erodes the illusion, but it doesn't completely destroy it, so, you know, we do our best.
Nature makes herself known in number 5. With an outdoor theater, sometimes you just have to deal with June bugs.
You know, in film, if I'm the director of a film and I want to direct your focus to a particular character, I can just do a close-up of that character. And I don't have to worry about all the other characters because you can't see them. On stage, you can see everybody. So the director has to direct focus. And in order to do that, one of the most essential aspects of that is that whoever's moving on stage, that's who I'm watching. So if King Lear, and my story about June bugs has to do with King Lear, if King Lear is in the middle of railing with his daughters and they're kicking him out, they're sending him out into the storm, and I'm playing Kent and I'm shackled upstage right, so I'm on the other side of the stage, but it's a big dramatic moment and it's imperative that I stay still. You know, if I move, then all of a sudden everybody's going to look at me.
Then you're upstaging.
Precisely.
Which is a no-no.
Which is, yes, and which is fine. And my entire focus is on Lear and what's going on over there, King Lear. And all of a sudden this June bug just goes and lands right on my forehead above my eye.
Oh.
And starts creeping down over my eyelid. And I hung in there. I did.
That's that actor's concentration.
It is, yes. And I'm sure at an appropriate moment when there was a, you know, some sort of conflagration, I knocked it away. But it was crawling around there for a good long time.
As for number 6, Tom says it's all about how actors memorize all those great lines by Shakespeare.
I'll tell you what, I'm 55, and I've heard older actors have told me this when I was a younger actor, and they would say, it gets harder, and they're right.
It does
get harder. It's a process. Everybody does it differently. There are different different approaches to it.
Do you like start in January?
Well, yeah, the earlier the better.
Uh-huh.
My personal preference is not to start too early because I actually like to allow the last phase of that process to be in collaboration with the people I'm on stage with, because if I memorize too early, my sense is that I start getting locked into a certain interpretation that does not give consideration to what I'm getting from my scene partners on stage. And so every actor has their own preference in terms of how they want to pursue that.
Which naturally leads us to number 7. It's bound to happen, forgetting a line. Did you know that Shakespearean actors have a secret code when this happens?
If I'm on stage with someone and we call it going up or drying. The British call it drying. Yes. If somebody dries when you're on stage with them, you can see it. So you can see it in their eyes.
Is there like a panic?
The moment it happens, and there's actually like this, because if you're speaking in iambic pentameter, you know, ta-tum, 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 there's actually a standard SOS, which is, in sooth, my lord, I know not what to say.
Oh.
Which is an iambic cry for help.
For many years, the Illinois Shakespeare Festival used just recorded music in its productions. Tom's number 8 behind-the-scenes secret deals with live music, which is a part of adhering to the true Shakespearean tradition.
Kevin Rich, when he came aboard as artistic director, I think this is his fourth summer, one of the aspects of his vision was to return to some extent to original practices, that is to try to emulate and draw inspiration from the practices that were undertaken by, at least as far as historians tell us, by Shakespeare's original company. And of course, live music was a big part of that. And there's an awful lot of live music in his plays. Now, we have the texts, we have the lyrics to songs of his. In fact, I'm in Twelfth Night, I'm singing a couple, three of them, four of them, lyrics, but the actual melody has to be composed, and we have...
Do you compose that?
I did not do the composing for this summer. Our composing was done by our sound designer, I believe, to a great extent, Kieran Pereira, who is our sound designer, did some wonderful compositions for Shakespeare's poetry.
Come away, death, and in sad Cyprus let me be laid. Fly away, breath, I am slain by a fair cruel maid. My shroud of white.
But it's not just music providing sound for the plays. Number 9 deals with the additional soundtrack of airplanes.
We're performing in the open air, and so there are always going to be things that intrude upon the sound. And, you know, that's why theaters, you know, that are inside, they don't have windows, so they can completely control the light, and they're also, to a great extent, are soundproof, so they can completely control the sound. But an open-air theater like at Ewing Manor, that's not the case. It's a beautiful trade-off because we get to see the stars and have that experience, and it is a beautiful trade-off. But
it can be a noisy trade-off.
It can be a noisy trade-off because we're right on the flyway for the Bloomington Airport, so some nights the airplanes, for some reason, there's a lot of traffic, and some nights it's not so bad. Last year, we were doing Richard II, and Henson Keyes, my dear friend Henson Keyes, who was playing John of Gaunt, who has one of the most famous set speeches in Shakespeare, praising the virtues of England. And it's gorgeous. And he's dying. And he's got this speech early in the play, and for some reason, like 3 or 4 performances in a row, a jet decided to go over the theater right in the middle of that speech. And he was a champ. You just have to kind of stay in the moment, and everybody hangs with you, and then once, because you can't compete with it, it's impossible.
Number 10 brings us to one of the most important roles played in the theater at Ewing. Tom says the audience plays a crucial role.
The audience is genuinely a character in the play. There is an interplay between actor and audience that is sort of mutually energizing. And I've done performances, and sometimes some audiences are, and you've heard actors say this, some audiences are fantastic. They get all the jokes, they're fully present, they're vocal, they're responsive.
They're like the groundlings. Attentive.
Yes. And the most fulfilling performances that I've ever experienced as an actor have been with audiences that were, it's not that they're being rude, they're vocal, but their vocalizations, their energy is a part of the play. It becomes a part of the play. And it's absolutely thrilling to be performing for an audience like that. But that is, I think, the essence of live theater. Every iteration is different because every audience is different. And as soon as we get something from the audience, they laugh in different places, they sigh in different places, they become quiet in different places. And all of that stuff is informing the next moment of that particular performance.
At number 11, we're coming closer to the end of our list, which coincides with the sad feeling that can occur at the end of each season.
An awful lot of the people that we get to collaborate with over the summer go on to their next project. It's a part of the rhythm of a life in the theater. And I've already this summer have met people in the company that are already quite dear to me. And I know that at the end of the summer, in August, they'll be going on to the next thing. But in my experience, now I've been doing this for over 30 years, and in my experience, in some way or other, we keep in touch, and in all likelihood, we'll be on stage together again sometime in the hopefully not too distant future.
As for number 12, Tom Quinn has 12 seasons under his belt, but that's not a festival record.
My friend Dave Quartermeyer has done 13, so...
Well, you know, you could always shove him under a bus.
Right.
That's actor Tom Quinn, who, in his 12th season at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, is appearing in Twelfth Night and Peter and the Starcatcher. I'm Laura Kennedy.